නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Last week actually we have started a new sutta which is available in the Majjhima Nikaya which is the 28th sutta of Majjhima Nikaya and which was recited by Venerable Sariputta It is called Mahahatti Padopama Sutta. So the simile is the reason actually the name has come to this particular sutta. So the simile given is the elephant's footprint. Now all as we all know the elephant is the largest animal and when we consider its footprint that is also the largest footprint. So inside that elephant's footprint we can put any other animals footprint so basically elephant's footprint is being the last being the largest so Venerable Sariputta mentioned similarly the four noble truths is the basic teaching of the Buddha the most profound teaching of the Buddha and all the other teachings can be included inside this four noble truths So all the other wholesome states, all the other teachings of the Buddha can be included within this Four Noble Truths. So having said that, now he is explaining the Four Noble Truths, starting with the Noble Truth of Suffering. And he has given a brief introduction to the Noble Truth of Suffering. And then he start discussing it in detail. And he particularly start mentioning that The noble truth of suffering is the five clinging aggregates. And they are the material form aggregate affected by clinging, the feeling aggregate affected by clinging, perception aggregate affected by clinging, formations aggregate affected by clinging, and the consciousness aggregate affected by clinging. Now, after mentioning that, now he hopes to explain one by one. And he starts with the Rupakkhanda, Rupupadanakkhanda, the form clinging aggregate, or the material form aggregate which is affected by clinging. And there he elaborate what it is, Chattaricha Mahabhutani, Chaturnancha Mahabhutanam Upadaya Rupa. So they are the four great elements and the material derived from those four great elements. And then he is asking what are the four great elements. So they are the earth element, water element, fire element and the air element. Now he is going to explain the Patavi Dhatu. And he mentioned Patavi Dhatu also two forms. What is internal and then external. Now he is going to explain what is internal. And that is where all the internally belonging to oneself is solid, solidified and clung to. And he is giving 19 such examples, head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, etc. So last time we discussed these things. And after giving a list, he further mentioned, apart from this, whatever else internally belonging to oneself, which is solid, solidified and clung to, this is called the internal earth element. So this doesn't mean that these given examples only have earth element. Basically, each and every body part has all the four elements. But we can comparatively see the proportion of earth element included in given list is very high. Therefore, we can say they are more predominantly with earth element. Therefore, they are called, but in general, they are examples of earth element. Say for example, even we know that a tooth is actually a more fixed kind of a form. It doesn't mean it has no any kind of a watery characteristic. Because of its watery characteristics, that's why the all particles are very well bound together. So the water characteristic is there, that's why it is very well bound together. and there is a certain temperature, and again we can see maybe internally there is a little internal particles may be continuously moving, which is not really apparent to us. Now basically all these different characteristics or all the four elements are available in whatever we can call as an object, but what is proportionately very highly available causes it to consider as Patavi Dhatu or Apo Tejo Vayu. Now we are talking on Patavi Dhatu. So all these examples given have that characteristics. Their majority proportion is using the earth element, because of the earth element. Now after he explains that, he further mentioned, now both internal earth element and external earth element are simply earth element. Now as we discussed last week, so now here actually a given list is there, and just for us to have a sense, and we practically when we are practicing, so we can actually make use of this list so that our mind get fairly concentrated, fairly collected into the body and into these various body parts. So that's a very interesting type of meditation. So we are going through different parts of the body, paying attention again and again. So ultimately the result is that we may thoroughly understand it is not a kind of a solid, compact type of body. It consists of various body parts. It's a combination of many parts. It is not something, a solid unit as such, but it is something made up with so many little parts. So then that the Ghana Sanya, the wrong wave of compactness, will be diminished. And further as we are continuing, there may be element characteristics we may be able to recognize. Say for example, if you touch your hand, there is a hardness. There may be softness, there may be roughness, there may be smoothness. And in your hand, you might feel its weight. So all the earth characteristics are there. So more we associate the body, these earth characteristics become more evident. And as we continue our practice, now we don't need to put any labels. This as head hair, body hair, teeth, nails, etc. Rather, we can simply recognize the elements. So there our practice become more intensified, but with reduced unnecessary perceptions. Now earth element has become more evident, directly known, while all conventional names what we have given to these different body parts for our recognition are all abandoned. Now the mind has certain simplicity, but still it has some penetrative wisdom, because it has become well concentrated, and again we are doing it mindfully with a balanced effort. So there is a potential for various insights to arise, and when those insights are present, it is not limited to this internal body. You can apply it even to the outside inferentially. And there, Venerable Sariputta highlights, Yacheva kopana ajjattika patavidhatu, yacha bahira patavidhatu, patavidhatu revesa. So whatever you call internal earth element and whatever we call external earth element are simply merely earth element. So these boundaries, internal, external, so these are merely human-made, mind-made boundaries. So once those are eliminated, so we can see in general, everywhere the earth element. So basically all four elements are there. Now we are talking about the earth element. So you may understand, okay, whatever we call internal earth element, whatever we call external earth element are merely earth element. So that boundary, internal external boundary being very much like abandoned, so mind become evenly spreaded. And on the other hand, mind once it understood this true reality, it becomes dispassionate about the earth element. So So earth element is not something to be associated, not something to be clung to. Rather, now mind has some thorough understanding about the earth element. So as a result of that, it is being very much like relinquished. And Buddha further mentioned, and that should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom, thus, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. With respect to different body parts, different external objects, whatever we call material, none of them is not, can be recognized using this phrase, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. So typically strong recognition is the body recognition, where we recognize body as a unit, body as something compact, and on top of that, body has a self. So we are having sakkaya ditthi with respect to body, so that is one of the most strong type of sakkaya ditthi. We consider this body is me, myself, or inside the body there is a self, or within the self there is this body. So likewise, different possibilities are there for the personality view, sakkaya ditthi, to produce. So that is how we live, that is how the whole society operates, so that we are identified using our body, using our external photographs, and that is actually how we recognize, how we identify with the body. But when one practicing the elements meditation, this misunderstanding slowly abandoned, so he now has a kind of a thorough comprehensive understanding about the earth element, water, fire, air, basically spreaded all around the universe. So therefore he can't grasp it now, he can't call it as me, myself. So he slowly abandons this kind of an attachment. So when one sees it thus as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the earth element and makes the mind dispassionate towards the earth element. Now, in order to emphasize this whole story, Venerable Sariputta further explained how impermanent it is, the great external earth element. Now, he is giving a simile. Now, there comes a time when the water element is disturbed and then the external earth element vanishes. Now, there is a such time. Now, he is predicting it is possible this is going to happen. And when even this external earth element, great as it is seen to be impermanent, subject to destruction, disappearance and change, what of this body which is clung to by craving and last but a while? There can be no considering that as I or mine or I am. If we consider this whole earth, it is so massive. And still there is a time, ultimately this whole earth going to be destroyed. This earth, external earth element going to be destroyed. And if such vast external earth element destroys, then no point of talking about this little, weak, internal earth element. It is also subject to impermanence. It is also subject to destruction. It is also subject to disappearance and change. By reflecting like this, he basically emphasized the non-self, and on the other hand, we can say promotes dispassion. So when we understand the non-governability of the earth element, or once we understand its impermanence, either momentary level you can understand its impermanence, and on the large scale you can understand the impermanence of this whole earth, then internal earth element also has the same characteristics. It is also impermanent, it is also unstable, it is also not producing enough satisfaction, and it is also, even though it appears like solid, internally there is nothing substantial. Internally there is nothing, anything kind of important. So as we discussed last time, when someone is practicing the Dhatu Manasikara, so he can actually recognize the manifestation of the earth element, and which helps for him to understand its true nature. And as a result of that, slowly, slowly, his mind becomes dispassionate about the earth element. So he is not ready now to consider it as me, myself, or I am. So I, mine, or I am. So his mind has become somewhat detached from the whole body. It doesn't mean that he won't feel it. He may be feeling it, but still there is no attachment, there is no grasping. Body is operating on its own, and the mind has become somewhat dispassionate. Now he further give another area, so that is with respect to patience in a way. So when others abuse, revile, scold and harass, so he mentioned that the bhikkhu, whoever the person practicing, may understand this painful feeling born of ear contact has arisen in me. This is how this story has happened. So even though someone is abusing, someone is scolding, harassing, still how this has happened is because of the painful feeling born of ear contact. So ear contact is the cause. Ear is there, sounds are there. So once they are aligned, then we can say the ear consciousness happens. So this process repeats. And then we perceive it like three things: ear, sound and the ear consciousness. So this causes to produce the passa, the contact, and then contact causes feelings. Now this is how actually I am experiencing this painful feeling. Even though they are talking, harassing, abusing, but ultimately what happened is this kind of a process. Whatever the sound has hit the eardrum, that's again a kind of physical activity. As a result of that, ear consciousness has arisen. So when this process repeats, we perceive it as coming together of three objects, that is the sound, ear and the ear consciousness. So this causes the contact to happen. Contact causes feeling. So Venerable Sariputta further turns our attention now to the impermanence. He's telling that this contact is impermanent, that feeling is impermanent, that perception is impermanent, that formations are impermanent, and that consciousness is impermanent. Now if we consider this little scenario where someone's abuse come and hit the eardrum, we hear it. So basically that whatever the ear, whatever that contact, whatever that sound, all that are impermanent. So those all belong to the form aggregate. Sound, ear, belong to the form aggregate. So that's impermanence. And he further highlights that contact also impermanent. Feeling also impermanent. Perception is also impermanent. Formations are also impermanent. The consciousness, that is the here, the ear consciousness, and later it may be the mind consciousness. All consciousness are also impermanent. So he is turning our attention into the impermanence so that basically he is not taking things personally. Rather he is knowing things with wisdom, what we have derived through his practice. So he has practiced elements meditation, and he's using that wisdom, or we can say the insight knowledge, to abandon whatever the kind of uneasy feeling or little angry feeling which is arising because of the abusing. He is now using to abandon that kind of an anger. So he is putting his understanding of elements into the practice. So this is actually very important, because we consider sometimes, so elements meditation we are practicing only at the monastery, only at the say sitting meditation or at a retreat level, and then we are not really getting its benefit at large scale. So if we know what we are experiencing, how this whole physical experience is happening, so that understanding, that insight knowledge can be applied to various life situations. Now he is giving one example here. So when someone is abusing, when someone is scolding, so can we use the knowledge that we have gathered through our elements meditation practice to that scenario? Can we use that understanding to abandon the anger? So similarly, we can talk about when lust is arising. Suppose that you are looking at a beautiful sight, and as a result of that, suppose lust is arising. That is also happening because of contact. Now all that are impermanent. Contact is impermanent, sight is impermanent, the feeling is impermanent, the perception impermanent. So whatever the thoughts arising, that those are also impermanent, and different consciousness, that also impermanent. So when he is seeing like this, so his mind becomes somewhat dispassionate, not interested about the whatever that incident anymore. As a result of dispassion, so mind slowly resides at seclusion. So basically, so this understanding, these insight knowledges, we can apply to day-to-day activities and keep the mind fairly relaxed without making it burn. And he is giving another simile, another sort of situation. So he being attacked by something more disagreeable, maybe with fists, maybe clods, sticks, knives. So this is a more gross kind of an attack. Previously it is kind of a speech related attack, abusing, but here it is more a physical attack. Now even this, once this physical attack is considered, so there are, and Sariputta mentioned, this body is of such a nature that contact with fists, clods, sticks and knives assail it. So because this body is so gross, it is made up using these elements, so it is very fragile on one hand, and on the other hand it is very much like at a risk. Because at any given moment, any of these physical other objects can hit this body. So he is trying to give a perception, rather than finding fault with the others, he is now very much like coming back to us. They are hitting because this body has the nature of this solidity. Because it is solid, because it is with more into the earth element. So whenever someone is hitting using his fists or clods or sticks or knives, whatever, so they come and hit the body. So he is very much like, rather than attributing the whole situation to an outside person and being angry, now he is trying to see a way to overcome anger by turning it inside. So this body has the nature, so that is where the issue. So now you even further become dispassionate about the body, rather than finding fault with the others. So you are recognizing, okay, this body is made up with like that. Suppose that your body is completely transparent and it is not so solid. So then if someone uses his fists or clods or sticks, whatever, it may not really hit the body, because there is no any such kind of a very gross solid type of material body. It may be a very refined type of body. Then we can't say when someone is hitting, it may hit the body because it is so refined. But unfortunately, this body what we have as humans is very gross, very hard type of body. So easily, so these external solid objects can attack this body. So on the other hand, now he is reminding us the simile of the saw. Akachupama Ovada. This is a very well known simile what Buddha has given to the monks. In Kakachupama Sutta, so he is giving the simile, even if bandits were to sever, you are savagely limb by limb with a two-handled saw. He who gave rise to a mind of hate towards them would not be carrying out my teaching. So this is the kind of an extreme case Buddha is using as a way to encourage, in a way we can say, the type of patience, and on the other hand to avoid any kind of an anger growing in our mind. So anger has to be abandoned. So it is not an easy task. So that's why many methods are explained to abandon anger. Just by merely practicing metta meditation, it's very unlikely that we are going to completely abandon anger. So metta meditation is helpful to temporarily subside anger, but in order to eliminate anger again and again, so we need these kind of reflections, and which are really based on wisdom. So once you know the elements, their true nature, so it's giving some sort of a perspective which is more capable of looking at things more deeply. We already discussed, so this body has a nature of solidity, so whatever external solid objects can come and hit the body. And further, after mentioning about the simile of the saw, this particular monk, whoever the person trying to develop the practice, he is able to abandon whatever that craving or whatever that anger arising in the mind. So he basically, Venerable Sariputta basically explained how this particular person has to think. So tireless energy shall be aroused in me, an unremitting mindfulness established. My body shall be tranquil and untroubled, my mind concentrated and unified. And now let contact with this fists, clods, sticks and knives assail this body. For this teaching of the Buddha is being practiced by me. So he is giving more emphasis to the practice rather than finding fault with another one and going to argument or going to any conflict. Now he is with himself. Even though someone is abusing verbally, even though someone is hitting physically, still he is turning things inside, keeping the mind quiet, keeping the mind unattached, keeping the mind free from any defilement. And further, he gives another area. So when someone is reflecting about the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, so he mentioned that his mind has to establish in equanimity. Now this is actually another area which might useful, because you know, once we practice Satipatthana, more and more the mind become dispassionate, more and more mind understand the true nature, that's why it become dispassionate. And as this process continues, so his mind become temporarily released. It is released to the amount of wisdom what we have, Tadanga Nibbuti, quenched to that level. If we have a very strong, thorough understanding about the true nature, to that level, a strong relinquishment, a strong detachment would arise. Then it's easy that for us to abandon the body, abandon in the sense that to relinquish the body, to avoid any kind of grasping to this body. Not only body, even to the outside external objects, we can avoid any kind of grasping. Because we have seen the true nature. We understood its impermanent nature, its unsatisfactory nature, non-governable nature, or we can say intrinsically there is no anything substantial. So that empty nature, someone has understood. Now, once that is there, it may cause the mind to release without attaching to things, without grasping things. Now the point is, this yogi is now trying to maintain that equanimity. that release state of mind. Etan santang etan panitan yaddang upekkha. So this equanimity towards all the formations is very sublime, serene, peaceful. So let me continue this. Let me maintain my attention into this very subtle, relaxed, calm, equanimous, sublime kind of a state, which is possible as we practice the elements meditation or the Satipatthana practice. Now, once it is there, assume that the mind shifts to something else. Again, certain past memories are coming, the future plans are coming, again some conventional stuff are coming. So the result is, again the mind shift. It loses this balance, it loses that previous simplicity, it loses that previous equanimity, and it again go and tangle with something. Assume that once that tanglement has happened, now Buddha, or rather the Venerable Sariputta, is mentioning a criteria to take it back. So that is the way that he is mentioning here, recollects the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. So by reminding the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, recollecting the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, so if his mind abandoned this new grasped state of mind and come back or revert back to that simplicity, unattached simplicity, then that is good. But if it is not, so that means he has to arouse more energy, he has to have more urgency. Now he is giving a little simile here. So in this traditional environment, so when a woman is going and living with her husband, so there are other relatives inside this house. There is the father-in-law, there is the mother-in-law, maybe brother-in-law, sister-in-laws. So it's a family actually, unlike in the today's terms. So in the traditional society, so it's a large family is there. So this new woman is now coming to that family as the daughter-in-law. Now this is a new place for her. Actually it's not much familiar with. And it's a new place for her. And there are elders, there are unknown people who are not yet familiar with. Now she is having some sort of a sense of urgency. So she is actually being very careful not to make any fault, because this is her husband's family. So once she comes to this her husband's family, now particularly she is careful about the father-in-law, because he is typically considered as the householder. So this, we are talking of the traditional East family background. So this is the model typically we have. So father is the chief of the family, and mother, daughter are very much under his supervision. And so this is the typical traditional family background here we are talking. Now to that family, when a daughter-in-law is coming, so the husband is actually has his father already available. So this father is actually still the governing body, we can say. In today's terms, he is the administrator. Now, when this daughter-in-law comes to the house, so she also has to abide by this kind of a scenario, kind of hierarchy. So she also has to adapt to this system. So particularly with respect to father-in-law, she has to arouse urgency, be more respectful. If there is any kind of a family tradition, that has to be followed with. If there are any customs that she has to adhere to, so all that she has to concern. Now telling this simile, so what Venerable Sariputta wants to highlight is that the monk, whenever he remembers about the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, it should be very much like how that daughter-in-law remembers the father-in-law. because then she quickly comes back to her senses and become more sensible, maintaining her manners, establish mindfulness, all that is there when she remembers her father-in-law. So similarly, the monk has to have some sort of respect, kind of an honor towards the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. So when such remembrance, when such recollection of the Buddha Dhamma Sangha happens, if his mind established back in that equanimity, so that is good. That is expected in a way. So if it is not happening, basically Venerable Sariputta mentioned here, if it is not happening, then it is a loss for me. It is a loss for this particular monk. It is a loss for me, it is no gain for me, it is bad for me, it is not good for me. When I thus recollect the Buddha Dhamma and Sangha, equanimity supported by the wholesome does not become established in me. So when I am reflecting the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, if my mind withdraw from any other sensual desire or any anger or any kind of other entanglement and revert back to the simplicity, revert back to that unattached equanimity, so that is the expected result according to the Sariputta. If it is not happening, so that means still I don't have such kind of a urgency. I don't have that such kind of a respect towards the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. So here actually we can remember, if you can remember this Indriya Bhavana Sutta. So in Indriya Bhavana Sutta, to the typical practitioner, Buddha is giving three situations or three strategies to revert back to that simplicity, to revert back to that equanimity. Olarikam sankatam patisamuppanna. So whenever he was in that equanimity, suppose that there is a shifting happen, so mind go and establish that something else, some kind of a distraction, and as a result of that mind get agitated, and now the mind has become again somewhat conditioned, colored, and now he has to revert back. So there are three possibilities. I mean, not only three possibilities, but some possibilities are there. So three Buddha mentioned in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta. So the monk has to reflect, okay, this is kind of a gross state, what I am currently in. I was in a very subtle, very relaxed state. So when reflecting like that, his mind may naturally incline towards that relaxed state. Another case is that understanding the conditioned nature, sankatam, of this new state. So as a result of that, again, he is able to revert back to that old equanimous state. The other case Buddha mentioned there is the patisamuppanna nature, so how it is dependently arisen. So when one reflects how things are dependently arisen, again he is able to revert back to that old pleasant equanimity. Now interestingly, for a sekapuggala, for a trainee, Buddha give a different situation. So when a trainee is practicing, still his mind can shift it to something else. Rather than maintaining his mind at this equanimity, unattached, non-grasping state, still there may be a possibility that his mind go and grasp. But there the recommended practice is simply attiyati harayati jiguchati. So he simply mentioned, okay, you don't need to, you are simply being ashamed of what has happened. Because you thoroughly understood the true nature of the phenomena, their impermanence, their unsatisfactoriness, their non-self nature, but still the mind has become fooled. Still the mind has subjected to an old habit. Now you feel ashamed of it, ashamed of what has happened. So that aroused shame would be enough for you to revert back to the old peaceful equanimous state. So it's very much like such scenario that Venerable Sariputta is also explaining here. So whenever the mind has shifted to any kind of a grasping, so he is saying, okay, now you have to reflect about the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Now that urgency, that respect, that sort of shame would arise in your mind, so it automatically shifts back to the equanimity. Like a daughter-in-law thinking about her father-in-law. Again, she comes to her senses, she becomes more restrained, maintaining her manners, composed, etc. So similarly, Buddha says the monk has to reflect the Buddha Dhamma Sangha so that he will revert back to the equanimity rather than maintaining any kind of an attached, agitated type of state. And when he is reflecting Buddha Dhamma Sangha, immediately his mind revert back to the equanimity, then that is a gain. Then it is something good for me. So you can see, so this is how he basically explained how to practice with respect to the earth element. Now this, I mean, it's a kind of a long story, long description given. In one sense, he is talking about the Dukkha Ariya Satcha, the noble truth of suffering. And there he is talking about the five aggregates, starting with the form aggregate. Form aggregates are the four elements, starting with the solid earth element. And now he is talking how to practice with the earth element. And he is giving examples to the earth element using the body. And after going through the practice, his mind become dispassionate because internal earth element and external earth element are very similar. And now the mind has released from the earth element. And now how are we going to further maintain that unattached state, non-grasping state? And he is giving some reflections. So whenever the mind becomes angry, so one case is he is trying to take back our understanding about the elements. So we already understood the nature, the true nature of the elements. So whenever sound hits the eardrum, such thing has happened. So you are reverting back to the equanimity. Another scenario is when the body being hit by something solid, maybe through a weapon or club or something, stick, etc. Again, you are reflecting using the elements, particularly the solid element, and reverting back to the equanimity. And on the other hand, you can reflect about the simile of the saw, which Buddha has mentioned, kakachupamovada. And that also will help us to revert back to the equanimity rather than going into any anger. Another case is that he is asking us to reflect about the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and then again you become shameful about what has happened, that you have shifted back to why you have come to this agitated state. So when you reflect about the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, you establish urgency and revert back to the equanimity. So these are the methods actually Venerable Sariputta explains here, and we'll go into the other elements later. And with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions. So we have a question from our side. Venerable Dhamma Vijita going to explain.
Yes, Bhante, thank you for your teaching. And pardon me. I wanted to make one statement, and then I have one question. You mentioned at the most basic level we cling to a sense of self,
mm-hmm.
and that's our strongest clinging, would mm-hmm. be the sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to make a statement that, and this isn't challenging the Buddha or anything, but at the most basic level, that sense of self that we cling to is a survival
mm-hmm.
instinct to
mm-hmm.
help us survive.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to make that statement. And that, it's a very interesting thing to consider.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking about how...
I can agree, because that is the bhava-tanha. Bhava-tanha.
Clinging to existence.
Existence.
Yes.
Clinging to, because we want to continue without dying.
Yes. Yes. And it's interesting because the Buddha is encouraging us ultimately to surpass
even that
becoming again or existing again. So it's very interesting.
So even to understand that instinctual desire to exist has to be abandoned.
Yes. And it can help us live a much more wholesome life if we're not clinging to the self so much. And ultimate wholesomeness is just to be free. But I had one question. You were speaking of letting go of or establishing equanimity. And Bhikkhu Bodhi mentions that this is a wholesome equanimity. Do you agree with
that? Yes, definitely.
So my question is, what is an unwholesome equanimity? I would be interested to know what that is.
No, one thing is now, rather than, maybe we can consider it also as unwholesome. So there may be an equanimity based on ignorance.
Okay.
Now here what we are talking is more equanimity based on wisdom. So the equanimity based on ignorance is where you become inactive, maybe a little lethargic. So particularly you are unable to do anything because you are in a very weak, timid kind of stage.
So to try kind of avoid...
Withdraw yourself. Withdraw. You are not doing anything and you become equanimous.
Maybe out of fear.
Maybe out of fear. Now, different reasons are there. Actually, one reason is the fear. Because you feel you are very weak, you are feeble, and the other party is very strong. Yeah. And so you can't make any action, so you become equanimous. The other case is maybe you are quite ignorant. So what's really going on, you don't know. So you... At a situation when you have to take an action, you don't know whether it is the correct position or correct time to take the action because you are widely ignorant, so you still maintain the equanimity. So there may be a situation that you have to quickly react, but you don't know about it. You are unaware of it because of the ignorance, so you still maintain that equanimity. So those are actually ignorant-based type of equanimity actually helps to grow ignorance, basically.
Okay.
So that's why probably you can remember when Venerable, so this Dhammadinna explaining the equanimous feelings. So when we are not knowing the proper cause of the equanimity or we are not properly handling the equanimity, she's telling, okay, we are producing or promoting the latent tendency of avijja anuse. So we are promoting that avijja anuse. So with respect to the pleasurable feelings, we are promoting ignorantly using this what we call the lustful nature of the mind, the raga anusaya. With respect to painful feelings, when we are going through a painful feeling with a lot of mental agony and distress, so then we are promoting what we call the patiga anusaya, the latent tendency to anger. And with respect to the equanimous feelings, when we are ignorantly continuing it, we are producing or we are promoting the ignorance. So there may be a situation that people are ignorant and they still maintain, as a result of that, they are maintaining very kind of inactive state of mind, which is also equanimous, but it is not the proper equanimity. But here the point is, so by going through vipassana practice, you have understood their true nature. So they are impermanent, they are unsatisfactory. Intrinsically, there is no any core, anything substantial, and things are beyond my control. And as a result of that practice, your mind has completely shifted out of the phenomena. So basically, the mind has let go of the phenomena totally. It is not you are holding any kind of a view. It is not that you are holding any kind of object. Rather, the mind has become completely objectless. Given up the things, detached from the things, released from the things. So this is the equanimity we are talking here now. It's a more profound kind of an equanimity we are talking here. So therefore, I can definitely agree with what Bhikkhu Bodhi mentioned. It's a wholesome equanimity we are talking, which is more based on the wisdom.
Okay. Is there a sutta that talks about this unwholesome equanimity that you were mentioning? This high avoiding and...
I think I have heard, I have learned that, I can't exactly remember the name. Yes, there are suttas talking about it.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. But I can't remember immediately what is the sutta which is talking about the ignorant kind of equanimity. But certainly I have read it. Yeah.
Okay.
I have a vague remembrance about it.
Maybe I'll search that on.
Yes, yes.
Access to insight or something. I don't know if unwholesome equanimity.
Yeah, yeah. It's not exactly mentioning as the unwholesome equanimity. Yeah. So they are...
is there a Pali word? Akusala.
not Akusala, it's called... can't remember. I'll try to figure it out. I can't now remember.
Okay.
But somewhere, so Buddha explains what is the ignorant kind of equanimity.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Back to you, Jennifer.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. I'd like to invite Gita for the next question.
What? I think I have switched on, aren't I? You can hear me, Bhante?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Bhante, I have come across this little bit of confusion quite often where it says five aggregates affected by clinging. So each time I read it, I have to quickly translate it to something else in my mind which says five aggregates which are the basis of clinging. Than affected by clinging. That makes more sense to me. And I'm just wondering if other people have similar sort of a problem with that way of translating.
So can you explain a little bit more about the difference?
Yes, when it says affected by clinging, it is as if the clinging affects the aggregates. Whereas it's the aggregates that we cling to, it's the basis of our clinging. It's what leads to clinging. So it's just in my mind. It's it seems more accurate, but I'm checking with you whether that's
so. There's an interesting sutta you can refer in Khanda Sangyukta, which is called Punnama Sutta, full moon sutta, Punnama Sutta in the Khanda Sangyukta. Actually, we discussed this in the Kalalgoda meditation retreat. So there are one monk is asking series of questions. Actually, altogether there are 10 questions he is asking from the Buddha related to these aggregates. And he is making a question. So is Bhante clinging and aggregates are entirely different or are they similar? So he is asking this kind of a question. So Buddha replies telling that clinging and aggregates are not entirely different and also they are not really similar. So he simply mentioned, so whatever you have this lustful attachment, what we call the Nandiraga or Chandaraga actually, the desirous kind of attachment towards the aggregates is what we call the Upadana. So therefore this Upadana basically is... we can't say it is exactly entirely different from the aggregates, so we can't say they are the aggregates. So typically we can say this is a kind of something unnecessary we are having towards the aggregates. This is the kind of desirous type of attachment we are having to aggregates. So on the other hand, we can say, assume that when someone becomes an arahant, so he still continues his existing aggregates, but without any attachment. Say for example, he still lives, he still feels certain feelings are there, perceptions may be there, but he does not attach to any of them. His body continues. His body is actually the part of the form aggregate. But there is no any attachment, there is no any kind of a clinging or any kind of a wrong view telling this body is me, myself, etc. So the aggregates are operating, the clinging part is disappeared.
Right. So it's how we relate to the aggregates. There's an interaction there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Because we are not entirely away from the aggregates in the sense that so we are the aggregates currently operating. Say when we are eating something, okay, there is a feeling, and we still recognize the food. So recognition part is also there. So certain volitional activities are also there. The formations aggregate is also there. And say we are going to some tongue consciousness, maybe even mind consciousness. So all that consciousness part is also there. The body and the food belongs to the form aggregate. Everything is there. Now all these aggregates are operating, but we are going to have any kind of an attachment, any desire, any greediness, any grasping, or we are completely keeping the mind without any such greediness, grasping, attachment, is depending on our practice. Isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Yes, the mind interacts differently.
Differently.
In that situation.
Yes.
It's
yes.
Not matching. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yes. Okay, Bhante,
yeah,
thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Nandana for the next question.
Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay. My question is also about the five aggregates.
Right.
Bhante, now in Venerable Sariputta explained how one needs to weave when there's a feeling. Mm-hmm. One is to contemplate that this feeling arose because there was contact,
mm-hmm.
Consciousness and form, and then the contact arose and that is how the feeling arose.
Yeah.
So I was kind of thinking when I was listening to that. Now five aggregates, when they are mentioned as Rupa Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vinyana, in that order.
Mm-hmm.
But it appears to me like as if consciousness, although mentioned last,
mm-hmm.
it actually comes into play within our human experience, the consciousness comes into play at a very initial stage, the moment we start experiencing something with our senses, correct?
Actually, we can say like this. Now, if we want to go to the very orderly structure, what is explained in the Dhamma, we can refer the Madhupindika Sutta, how Venerable Mahakacchana giving the explanation. Chakuncha paticcha rupecha uppajje chakku vinyanam tinnan sangati passo passapaccaya vedana. So as a result of alignment with the eye with some sort of a form, then the eye consciousness arise. So this whole process repeats again and again, and altogether now we consider it as a contact. Now the mind and body both are getting involved, and as a result of that the feeling going to arise. And yang vedati tan sanjanati, so now you are trying to recognize this feeling, the recognition part is also going to arise. So therefore there's a such kind of an orderly fashion it is explained, but the interesting thing is these things are happening extremely quickly. Now for our clarity these explanations are given, but which is very difficult for us to see how step by step these things are happening inside the mind, because things are happening instantaneously. Actually, all five aggregates are happening together, and certain aggregates are more prominent. So when we are talking about the Kayanupassana, we are giving more emphasis towards the form aggregate. And when we are considering the feeling, the Vedananupassana, we are giving more emphasis towards the feeling aggregate. But it doesn't mean that the form aggregate is not present or the other aggregates are not present. They are also present. But what is more prominent, what is more applicable to us, is the feeling aggregate. So likewise, at a given moment, at a given occasion, we are giving some emphasis to a particular aggregate. Still, the others are also operating in the background.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's yeah. That is very clear now. Yes.
Yeah.
But what I was thinking is that the consciousness, to me, it appears as a consciousness aggregate is present with no matter at what stage of the process we are in. Like, for example, sanskara, right? Sankara. Sankara is like that involves some kind of an intention or kind of willful kind of thinking on our part. Is that correct, Bhante?
Yeah.
Right. So even at that stage, for us to do that willing or like forming an intention, there should be consciousness, right? Consciousness must be at play even at that stage.
Definitely, yeah.
Right. Okay, so that's what I'm trying to understand how this works in practice, because I find it very interesting that
I like to say like this. Now, say for example, assume that there were nothing in the mind. Now there are certain mental object appear in the mind, and when that mental object appear in the mind, you immediately become aware of it. So rather than allowing that object to let go, so your mind start little reacting to that object. So this is the function of the sankhara khanda. So you start fabricating it, you start preparing it, adding to it, multiplying it, etc., etc. So at one given moment, so this makes kind of a momentum that you have to act on it. So you are now making a strong intention. Okay, you are using your hand, your voice, or mouth, or etc. Now the six senses are into operation. So basically, avijja, paccaya, sankhara in that order. So the when name and form and consciousness are in operation, so when the moment that the consciousness get tangled with the name and form, there is a situation that it may trigger the six senses to operate at a given moment. Once that momentum has grown to a certain extent, it triggers the six senses to operate.
Yes. Yes, yes.
So the consciousness and name and form are very intrinsically, you know, they have to operate.
Operate, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So that begs the question.
Yeah.
Bhante, now, consciousness is like a primary knowing of an experience, like Vedana or whatever, right? The consciousness immediately arises at that moment with one whatever the senses that give us the signal or, you know, bring us the sense experience. But then we also, when we are mindful, we have a state of mind that is called mindfulness, sati. Now, with sati, what happens is we become aware of that consciousness, right? That earlier experience that we had with our consciousness, and now you become aware of that with our mindfulness. So I was kind of curious. I mean, so it almost looks like sati is totally outside all these things like consciousness and everything, because it has to be something outside or something different for it to be able to see or become aware of that experience that we are having with consciousness.
Actually, we can say like now the function of the consciousness is typically explained as vijanati. Vijanati means distinctly aware of or distinctly cognize. Suppose there are many objects, and when among these many objects you particularly pay attention to a single thing, and then you particularly pay attention to that. So distinctly knowing while many things are there, so that is the one important function of the consciousness. So you are capable of distinctly knowing various characteristics, distinctly knowing various attributes. So this is sort of the inherent, very primordial type of action what the consciousness is showing. Now, interesting thing is, now say once practicing vipassana, suppose we start dropping the objects, we are not attaching to any object, whatever coming to the conscious area, we start dropping things. And suppose there is a situation we are not attaching to anything, so that everything is dropped. Everything is dropped. So the mind becomes empty and no object. It becomes objectless. But still awareness is there. Awareness is there. So, but still it doesn't have any particular object to establish with. So that's
That's a very interesting state of mind. I have actually, I was about to talk about that actually, Bhante. It's like if you sit down and you know, just not fix your consciousness on anything. Like it's almost as if, I mean, you feel as if
it's full.
Like you're kind of blank.
That's why. So that is why we call it blank.
And it's just blank, and you don't. So you feel as if you're almost in control of your consciousness, because you're not allowing the consciousness to land on anything. You just make it's almost like the way I experienced it was like almost like a balloon, and you know, you just pump air into it and just make it bigger and push everything else outside. So you're kind of in that. It's very interesting. I understand what you said.
So that is where it is called unestablished consciousness. Appatittita vijnana, where there is no object for it to land upon. So as you correctly mentioned, it is not landed on anything. It is not stated on, situated on anything. It is not established on anything. And but still, it, the knowing characteristic is there. It is not completely unconscious.
Yes, Bhante. Thank you very much. Thank you so much. And also, Bhante, you mentioned about the three ways of coming back to your that blank kind of awareness kind of thing. From the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, like Olarika, Patichasamuppanna, and there's another one.
Sankata.
Sankata. Now, Sankata, you said, now I understand the Patichasamuppanna and Olarika. But the you said the Sankata is like condition. Are you, can you please explain it a little bit more to understand what it,
now,
how it...
Now, say, when you are talking about, now we just talked about this unestablished consciousness, where it is, nothing is there basically, mind is very spacious, and mind is maintaining its very much like its original characteristic. But for us to be angry, now we need to have certain kind of mental images about someone, and maybe his face and maybe his acts, etc. And now we start sort of preparing them in a certain fashion so that ultimately anger would arise. So we do this fabrication part. So the sankata means that this fabrication is there, this construction has happened. So as a result of that, this anger has arisen. So the anger is a constructed situation. It is not an unconditioned type of unconstructed situation. It is, it's a more a fabricated situation. We have made, we have prepared it. We have used various constructed, or we have used various constructs to prepare it. We have added certain thoughts to it. We have used certain memories to it. We have added certain past memories to it. Thoughts are there, images are there, this and that are there. Then we have prepared a huge something. Then we are angry. So this angry situation is something constructed, conditioned.
Right, but Paticca-samuppanna also means something like that, right? Because of that, this happens. How is it different from Paticca-samuppanna?
It is not contradicting, or it's not different. So here we are not paying any orderly fashion when we are talking about the constructed nature, conditioned nature. We are not much talking about the orderly fashion, how this depends on that, this depends on that, this depends on that. We are not talking about that. Rather, we simply, in general, how the new situation has arisen. So we simply understand, okay, these things have come together, and you know, I did kind of a fabrication. So this is my own additions are there, my own likes and dislikes are mixed up. So as a result of that, this has happened. But when you are talking about the Patisaupanna nature, so as you said, okay, we may be going to the sort of very sort of conditioned nature. So as a result of the I, then the form, then the I consciousness arise, and then the contact arise. Contact causes the feeling. Feeling causes the craving. Craving causes upadana, the clinging. Clinging causes the this becoming process, the being, the bhava. Then this whole mass of suffering has arisen. The agitation has come to be. Probably you can remember in the Loka Samudaya. So we discussed this in the Kacchanagotta Sutta. So Buddha explained this, how the Loka Samudaya happened. Chakkuncha paticca rupeja uppajja chakku vinyanam tinnan sangati passo passa paccaya vedana. Vedana paccaya tanha. Tanha paccaya upadanam. So likewise the conditioned nature, how dependently arisen dukkha happens with respect to each and every sense faculty. So we can, I mean, if someone is
interested,
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was trying to say, I think I understand. So Paticchasamuppanna is almost like a universal way of things taking place.
Yes.
Because
yes.
of this, this happens, because of this, that happens. And it is common to everybody.
Correct.
Whereas Sankata is like, depends on the person, how that person has thought, how that person has formed intentions, and created his own way of, you know, his own state of mind, right?
Actually, so even the Patisaupanna nature also, ultimately, as a result of our practice, it has to change. Now, the certain part may be common. So, till Vedana, it is very common. So, after Vedana, why we are making craving onto it? So, that is the area that we need to work. So when feelings are happening, are we able to let them go without attaching to them, without craving to them? So that is the area we have to practice.
Right. Okay, Bhante. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I understood it very well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Yasuo.
Thank you, Bhante, for the time to address my question. Bhante, I'm kind of would like to talk a bit on the state of mind, I would say. Now, in day-to-day, sometimes I see there are thoughts coming into my mind and I'm able to see them and watch them, and then most of them come and disappear. There may be some things that I need to do. But Bhante, over the time, I have kind of seen a pattern, in the sense there are some thoughts, I say most of them are like sensual. I know that it is coming, somehow I can see, even I can watch it, but I can also see I'm acting on that. Sometimes I would have preferred not to. I would have rather preferred to come and go, but it doesn't happen. So I'm kind of thinking maybe one day I will, but I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, so that's true, because our internal habits or habitual tendencies are still very strong. Even though we understand the Dhamma, even though we have even practiced to some extent, but still these thoughts quickly compel us to an action. We can't stop it because
that's
things
it.
Are...
Yeah, compelled. Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. So we have to further work on it. Now at least we understand the situation. That's the good thing, because typically what happened is we were ignorantly doing the whole thing, ignorantly following our desires, and we didn't have any perspective about it. Now at least we know, I mean, these things are there, I understand its fruitless nature, but still I am subjected to it. So I have some better position, better potential to further refine my practice and further develop my understanding, so that in at another future occasion, I am not being sort of governed by that, not being followed by that.
Yes, Bhante, that is true. Yeah. Because I have kind of, I wouldn't say identified, but I have seen a pattern. I know that the area where sometimes I lose that control.
Yeah.
But as you said, yes, I can at least see it now. Maybe eventually it might to the next step.
correct. So Buddha emphasized.
Thank you, Bhante.
Panyaya diswa diswa pahatabba. So he mentioned that panyaya diswa pahatabba. Or else sometimes he called panyaya diswa asava parikkina honti. So by seeing things through the wisdom, so all that past habits, latent tendencies are being slowly faded away.
Yes.
So understanding,
Thank you,
their presence, their operation is very, very important. Then only we have a possibility to abandon them.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I think we have come to the end of the session.
Bhante.
Yeah.
There's actually a written question here.
Okay. Go ahead.
It says, Therwan Sanai Bhante, does this wholesome equanimity mean a dukkhama sukha vedana?
We can't say so either, because this is fairly adukkhama sukha. I agree with you. But when we are talking Vedana, pleasurable feelings, painful feelings, equanimous feelings are there. But when we are talking this wholesome equanimity or the equanimity to all the formations, it may have the feeling torn off this adukkama sukha Vedana. But more than that, it has the wisdom coming through the practice. So it is not merely, we are not here merely talking the adukkama sukha vedana. Here we are talking more understanding based equanimity. So you become understood, you understood the true nature of things, and as a result of that you maintain equanimity without being burned by them, without being interfered by them, because you understood their true nature. So you have become dispassionate about them. You are now maintaining distance from them because you understood their true nature. So this is the equanimity we are talking.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. That was the last of the questions.
Okay, then I like to conclude the today's session. And we have spent 1.5 hours discussing the Dhamma, shortly practicing as well as listening to the Dhamma, and all the merits what we have accumulated we share with all the celestial beings, with all the past relatives and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to understand the Buddha's teaching, practice it to the best of our ability, and to attain path fruition nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. Ittavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang
Sabbe devana mudantu sabba sampatti siddhya etta patacha amhehi sambandam punya sampadam sabbe bhutana mudantu sabba sampatti siddhya etta patacha amhehi sambandam punya sampadam sabbe sattana mudantu sabba sampatti siddhya akasattha ca bhummattha devana gamahiddhika Punyam tang anamodit vacharam rakantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika. Punyam tang anamodit vacharam rakantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika. Punyam tang anamodit vacharam rakantu mangparam. Idam vo nati nam hotu sukhita hontu nateyo. Idam vo nati nam hotu sukhita hontu nateyo. Idam vo nati nam hotu sukhita hontu nateyo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Yamina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, Therwan Sanai.